Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Maria Tuena, CMO of AdsMobile, and I should add also author of the Mari V book series. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Mario.
Yeah, and I think you're one of maybe two out of our 100 plus guests to be back for a second time. So that shows how special of a guest you are.
Oh, or that if you hang around long enough, it comes back, right?
that's funny. But you've been on the show before and you told us a little bit about your background, but for listeners maybe joining in for the first time, tell us a bit about your career journey.
Oh yeah, sure. So I was raised in New Orleans but born in Miami, and I think that really informed my career journey. We'll talk about Mighty V in a little bit, but the dissonance when I was growing up between having a Latino household and a non-Hispanic American environment was very challenging. And I was very aware of it as a child, but I didn't have a lexicon to put around the experience. So I studied psychology, I think, to understand my childhood. And then I got a graduate degree in film and television and embarked on an agency career and spent 20 years doing general market advertising. That's all I did. General market didn't touch the Hispanic market, didn't speak about multicultural audiences. It was almost like I had denied that part of my background. And about 15 years ago, I came home from the grocery store and I was putting my groceries away. And my late husband said, "You know, you never buy the same brand of anything twice." I said, "Really? What makes you say that?" He goes, "Well, it's just an interesting observation because I just read a study that said Hispanics are brand loyal." And my response was, "Oh, whenever you read a study like that, they're never talking about us. They're talking about my parents." And that conversation, when I think back, that conversation really changed everything for me, because I then became really obsessed with A, why wasn't I brand loyal, and B, why brands weren't talking to me. And it took me down a rabbit hole for many, many, many weeks where I would stay up really late at night and do my own research and ask my siblings and my cousins and others that had been born in the US or had came at an early age, "Are you guys brand loyal? Have you ever noticed? Why? Blah, blah, blah." And to make a long story short, I was working at McCann at the time, and I was flying to New York to work on another global CRM program. And I told him, "I really don't want to work on this. I think the future is the bilingual, bicultural, and the future is digital and mobile based on everything I'm reading and everything I'm seeing. And what a great opportunity, because the bilingual, bicultural are organically going online because they're seeking content and others like themselves." And that conversation and that whole presentation I did that day, I asked them to fund a discipline to help reach and engage the bilingual, bicultural, and they did. And I'm forever grateful for them for having done that, because it really uncovered and I think demystified this whole thinking that the bilingual, bicultural, because we're English language proficient or dominant, that it's okay to just reach us with general market advertising. And the reality was always, well, you're reaching us, but clearly you're not touching us if we're not brand loyal. So we did a major study back then with MSN Latino, again, another partner very grateful for, and we studied Hispanics across acculturation levels across the U.S. And our thesis was pretty simple. And just to remind you, what I was trying to do is bring this consumer cohort to the forefront and make brands understand that we are worthy of marketing to
the bilingual bicultural cohort. Right?
Yeah, the bilingual bicultural cohort. And the thesis was pretty simple. What it was, that children of immigrants are the brand influencers in their multi-generational families, because at a very early age, they are translating, they're interpreting the US ethos, which is all about independence. And they come from an ethos where it's all about interdependence, which is what the Latino ethos is all about. We inform brand and product purchases, demystify things for our parents at a very early age, and we do it throughout our whole life. So once I made made that pivot and worked on that study and validated our hypotheses, it was like I was off and running and I was never going back to general market because we were going to be general market one day.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I've heard your story before, but I don't think I ever heard that it was your late husband that asked that question. I'm curious, like what was his background to make that observation? Because most people don't think about brand loyalty or brand. I'm just curious.
Oh, he was a marketing guy. He was a software engineer that had become a marketing guy, and he too had studied psychology. So he had that consumer behavioral passion and interest. And, you know, he was living the fact that I was surprising him every day when we came back from the grocery store. So I was, you know, it just became this big question for me. It's like, so what are the four P's? Which one moves me at the, is it the product? Is it a promotion? Is it the color of the packaging? I mean, what makes me buy something if brands are not reaching and engaging me through media, right? So I started then wondering, you know, okay, if I think about the four P's, what is driving me at the point of purchase? Is it the color of the package? Is it the promotion? Is it because it's a new product? I didn't know. I just knew that advertisers weren't marketing to me. And it was just like this window opened that I realized that's why I'm buying so inconsistently. Because it's really just based on a whim and what's going on at the moment.
And so we actually did a study previous to the newest one, which I do want to talk about with Publicis, but we did a study uncovering that, remember? About the...
Yes.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that one and then talk about... I think that's a good segue also into the new report we did.
Yeah, I think that was one of the findings, right?
Yep.
That the need to have marketing reflect us and to touch us, right, in order to engage us. And the fact that if in the absence of that, we tend to buy much more spontaneously, right?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting and it makes a lot of sense because if a brand isn't building any awareness with you, and in a resonant way emotionally, then you can't expect a consumer to, at the point of purchase, pick you for no other reason than just, oh, the price is lower than the competitor or your packaging is nice. You can't just bank on one of those, right? You need to have a relationship with the brand.
And then I think one of my favorite findings from that study too was this idea that you coined about the digital Sherpa, right? Like, not only is it about reaching this cohort bilingual, bicultural, but they're also a conduit to older generations purchasing on their behalf.
Yes. 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 Which goes back to the original study, which was all about uncovering that insight and validating it and recognizing that, you know, unlike the US where we are very individualistic and our marketing is very much about reaching another consumer or a consumer at the other end of the ether, where it's like one-to-one marketing. With the Hispanic market, it's definitely a collective. And within that collective, there is probably one or two individuals that are really driving the collective purchases. And that's who you really need to reach. And we'll talk about that in a second, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's great. I mean, I've obviously we've known each other for a while, and I've been a fan of your work in terms of focusing on bilingual, bicultural. That's my experience as well. And I feel like you, Marivi, is really a reflection of that, right? In terms of the Navigator series. So tell us, I mean, obviously I see your philosophies in this character, but tell us about how you came up with that and what's new with that?
Yeah, thanks, Mario. So it's interesting because there was a lot of parallel pathing happening when that conversation came up about, I buy a different brand every day or every time I go to the store. When my late husband mentioned that, it really took me then to a journey, call it retroculturation. I'm not sure what we're going to call it, but it was from a career perspective that morphed into a personal journey that brought me back to my childhood. And I remember thinking we had so much responsibility to protect and inform and educate and help our parents and our Spanish dominant relatives, but yet never saw ourselves in the media and didn't have a character that we could relate to that said, this is my character. This is my Sherpa. Who's going to be our influencer and our Sherpa if we don't have one? And we're responsible for playing that role for our families. And the more I thought about it, the more this came into my mind. It's like, why isn't there a story of a character or a series of stories of a character that plays that role of navigator? And I called her purposely the master navigator, because she is the master at navigating not just both cultures and both languages, which code switching is a lot. And I don't think we give ourselves enough credit for the amount of work it is to go back and forth between language and culture. And to do it at an early age where no one's trained us to do it, we fall into it and we just do it, I think it speaks a lot about this, our cohort, right? And the more I thought about her, I thought, you know, her role in the family, and that it shouldn't be just about one character. It should be about all the family members, and it should represent a multi-generational family, which is what 37% of the market lives in the Hispanic market, a multi-generational family. And then it should follow her, because things happen to us and things are interpreted differently for a Hispanic family than an American family. So it's the first book is called School Crossing, and it starts with the crossing over to school, which for many of us is the first experience we have where it's like, oh my God, I'm not like anyone else. And it follows, it's a longitudinal book series. It started as that. It following Mighty B from first to sixth grade, and organically and authentically sharing the experiences she lives it. Her code switching at home, her English with her siblings, her Spanish with her older relatives. In her first day of school, her name gets changed. It's Maria Victoria de la Paz Abascal, and the teacher really can't pronounce it, so she just calls her Mary Paz. I mean, that has happened to probably all of us at some point. It's something that many times we just go, oh, and we brush it off. But for a child, from a psychological perspective, it tells that child, you are not good enough as you are. There are some changes that need to be made for you to be here, right? And that, I think, is very damaging emotionally. So things happen to her in school. She has a different lunch. That's very embarrassing. She misunderstands assignments. The teacher asked the students on her first day of school to draw a self-portrait, and she comes from a collective ethos. She doesn't come from independence. So she's the only one in her class who draws a picture of herself with her whole family around her. And again, a moment of embarrassment because the culture is not understood. And that's how we learn the American culture, by running through those experiences and falling, if you will, back to our original culture and then learning to code switch, right? It happens at a very early age. And so it follows her. My plan is to have 18 books, three per grade from first to sixth grade, and I may do more. I am enjoying it so much. It has cracked open and they're not autobiographical by any means, but they're greatly informed by a lot of my experiences and by some work I did with kids. So I really enjoy it. And it just so happened that the company I was working for decided to launch a streaming platform right before I joined, called Nuestra TV, whose mission is to have content for the Hispanic market across acculturation levels. So Spanish content for the Spanish Dom, bilingual content for those like us, the bilingual, bicultural, and English content for the English Dom. And I had been working on my books, and it said, can I turn this into a series? And they said, sure. So it started. And that has been an incredible, incredible learning experience and a very powerful experience for me personally. And I see other kids watching it, and I have gone to classrooms and have read the stories, and I am amazed and so humbled at the comments I get back from children who are so excited about seeing a character that looks like them. And the big thing, Mario, is that really has meant the world to me. You know, the truth about being a child of immigrants and that we play that role of navigator is not just a Latino story. Obviously, it's the story of all immigrant children, right? Especially if they come from a country where English is not the primary language. And I have had multiple experiences, including a handwritten thank you note from kids that have come from Egypt or India, who have told me, I am Mighty B. And I knew they were, but for them to get to that point, to realize that's me, even though I'm not Hispanic, I think is really powerful. So, the first episode of the Mighty B series launches tomorrow on Nuestra TV, and you can follow us at wearemightyb.com. And we have a website with some, it's getting updated, but there is information there for parents and teachers, et cetera.
I love that. I mean, and you're tapping into like something happening in our culture right now. Right. And we were joking around, you're recording it today at Palm Springs. And I asked you about Coachella, but you know, so one thing that's really interesting happening in Coachella, right? It's like the biggest Latino representation we've ever had at a Coachella. We have Bad Bunny, Spanish dominant, but everybody's listening to him. Number one streaming artist. I think Becky G, really interesting. I think she's more bilingual, bicultural, but also bringing out Peso Pluma, who's like the number one hot billboard right now. And it's a corrido, a very, you know, Mexican style of music. But then you mentioned Egyptian and Indian immigrants. You also had for the first time at one of the stages, a headliner singing in Punjabi, which is incredible, right?
Wow.
So you're like really touching into something in the cultural zeitgeist happening right now. And it's exciting. Tell us a little bit more. When we were talking a previous conversation, you mentioned someone raising their hand. You had asked a question and it was someone that you didn't think necessarily fit in. I love that story. I wanted to share that with the listeners.
Oh, I love this. Oh, thank you. Well, I had two great stories, but one particularly, which really touched me was, you know, I'm in the classroom with these third and fourth graders, and we're talking about what it means to be bicultural, and that if you have a parent from a different country, and the first boy who raised his hand, who said, my dad's from a different country, and I said, what country is he from? And he said, Minnesota. We'll leave that as is. But the second one, there was a girl in the back of the classroom, blonde hair, blue-eyed, looked like, you know, she had come off her great-great-grandparents had come off the Mayflower, looked very, you know, American in the traditional sense, non-Hispanic white. And she raised her hand and I called on her. And I got to tell you, I was thinking as I was calling her, to be honest, thinking, wow, I wonder what culture could she possibly have? Maybe she misunderstood the question. And she said, my name is Anne. My father died a couple of years ago and my stepfather is from Egypt and he speaks Arabic all the time. And she said, I am Maribi. And I had never really thought from an audience perspective that there would be a market for non-Hispanic general audiences who are now assimilating into multicultural or multi-ethnic families because of key life events like a marriage, which I thought was fascinating. So it was like, you know, you learn from students all the time. And I just think that was one of those moments where I went, aha, this is quite interesting. This is beautiful.
Yeah. And that ties into one of the, you know, demographic stats that I think we don't talk about enough in multicultural marketing or marketing in general, is that the fastest growing kind of racial demographic in Gen Z is multi-ethnic. Not even the fastest growing. It's actually the largest segment within Gen Z is mixed race, mixed background.
Isn't that something? Yeah. It's interesting, right? The norm is changing what we anticipated. And we all have talked about this for a long time, but the fact that we're living it is very powerful.
Yeah, it's really powerful. I mean, I tweeted out this morning, you know, for the first time ever, I think I mentioned that a corrido is number one on the top billboard. And I think last year, tequila overtook American whiskey as like the number one. It's a number two right now, but I don't know. It's just like, it's just an interesting time for us to be in what we, in the multicultural marketing space, because I feel like it's what we've been talking about, signals that inside boardrooms is actually playing out now.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know if you saw this weekend that Saturday Night Live, it was Ana de Armas and Carol G speaking Spanish, right? And then you had Bad Bunny on the cover of Time in Spanish. And there is something that is happening. And it's very powerful and very validating for all of us.
For sure. How do you, like kind of reflecting back on your career, how does that how does that feel now, kind of being in this time where we knew from the statistics, right, that this is going to happen, but like, how does it feel actually kind of living through it and experiencing it?
It feels a little surreal. And I look back and just think, you know, why as a child, there was this unspoken rule that the objective was to assimilate. Mm. And it was never told to me, but I just felt that that was the rule. Of course, I grew up, you know, in Louisiana, there weren't a lot of Hispanics around me. So there was a huge delta between us and the non-Hispanic American population there. But it's very interesting that now it's not so much about assimilating. It's about embracing your biculturalism in a steady state. I mean, that's how I see it. And I think it's so wonderful because it allows us to be 100% who we are and to not be someone else. Because I think once we start sacrificing pieces of ourselves to become the majority, that's where there's such grave dissonance within ourselves that you can do some damage, you know? So I think it's just better to just embrace the totality of who you are. And you're much stronger because of it. I've got this little tile that I've had hanging from my window in my home office for years that says, if you were born into a world that you didn't fit in, create your own. And I live by that.
I love that. And it makes me think too, like, I have to give some credit to Gen Z, right? I know it's kind of popular to make fun of them right now, but I really appreciate Gen Z. I think one of the things that they stand for is they come who they are despite their background, super proud of their heritage, of their biculturalness, if it's bicultural, their immigrant status. And I think they've played a big part in changing this paradigm of acculturation. They're like, no, I don't play by that rule, and I am who I am. And that's, I feel like, has empowered older generations to be like, yeah, I'm this or I'm that.
Totally. And I think that's a great insight, right? And I think one of the things that have helped them is their sheer numbers, because they are the majority within their cohort, right? So I think that's really powerful. So that allowed all of these other generations, including us boomers, to say, hey, secretly, I'm a Gen Z. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I'm like barely a millennial. I'm in that Gen X cusp, but you know, it was like, for me, it's obviously was a little bit better than my parents and grandparents' generation, but there was still that, the two worlds, the code switching. And I guess that's what Gen Z's doing away with, right? They're like, I'm not gonna code switch, I'm gonna be who I am, whether I'm at work with family or friends, which is cool.
That's right. I love that. Yes. There's no more dissonance in the code. It's like there is one code, right? And I think that's much more powerful for all of us, right? I think it's a beautiful thing. It's a great observation, Mario.
Yeah. And so we're almost here at our time. If people want to learn more about Marivi, you have the book series. There's also the TV series. Like, how can people buy the book, watch the series?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so you can go to wearemarivi.com to learn more about Marivi. Amazon carries both the first book and the second book. The second one is called Weekend Ways. So they're all tied to, I tried to write them in bundles, if you will. So it's like three books for each grade. And the three books represent, you know, school life, home life, school life. And it's just, and it's almost like all tied together. I joke, it's almost like Good Friday, Holy Saturday, Easter Sunday. There's always a resurrection. There's always a death in the terms of her personality and what's going on in her life. But the three books are all tied together. The third one of that first series comes out later this year. And then I'll start on the second grade series. They can buy them on Amazon.com. First one is called School Crossing. The second one is called Weekend Ways. And they can go to nuestra.tv Nothing is needed to register. This is a free streaming service for the Hispanic market, for anyone, really. You don't even have to be Hispanic. There's English content there as well. And Nuestra means ours, so it's our TV. And you can just start watching it. You can search, and you'll find her there, Maribi, the Master Navigator series.
And what about for people that want to connect with you and learn more about your work, your reports?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And all those brands out there that want to sponsor a series or want to help out with production, more than happy to talk to anyone interested. Maria, M-A-R-I-A, at wearemaribi.com is a great email.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining, Maria. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Oh, thanks, Mario. It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. I'm glad we were on this ride together.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.